as I said, I see my books as activism because I believe in the power of stories. Storytelling seems to be the way that I'm able to connect with people, make them think, sometimes maybe get them to change their mind.
Welcome to In Writing with me, Hattie Crissell. I'm a little bit hoarse today because it's the week before Christmas and I've overdone it on the festive socialising and I've woken up with a terrible cold, so apologies for that. This is the first intro I've recorded since the podcast launched, so I wanted to quickly say a huge thank you to everyone who's listened so far. It's been amazing to hear from people who are enjoying the interviews as much as I enjoyed doing them. Do rate and review it if you like it, because that helps it find more listeners. But also please get in touch if you want to chat about an episode. You can find me on Twitter, where my handle is my first name twice, so at Hattie Hattie, or you can use the hashtag InWriting. My interviewee today is Holly Bourne, a much-loved novelist for the young adult market. Holly is notable for using her stories to talk to teenage girls and young women about complex issues, including unhealthy relationships and self-esteem. So I was really interested to hear how she approaches that as a fiction writer. One of her biggest hits is the Spinster Club series, and this year she published a new YA title, The Places I've Cried in Public. In 2018, she gave us her first book for grown-ups, How Do You Like Me Now, which sold very well, and she has a second one, Pretending, coming out in April. I visited Holly in September at her house in East London, where she made me a cup of tea and showed me into the second bedroom, which doubles up as her study. So, over to Holly. Would you describe this space for me?
A little bit messy, as you can probably tell. But it's just, yeah, we've got the guest bed for when people come to stay with my Keanu Reeves cushion. And then just a big bookshelf full of, I call it like my little ego shelf of like my foreign editions and things of books.
Oh, amazing. I didn't even realise that's what they were. What are some of those languages?
Sometimes I'm not sure. Like, it will arrive through the post and I'm like, wow, this is a edition from somewhere in the world. Then have to like put one of the words in Google Translate to see what country it's from. But there's like all sorts of, there's like Russia and Turkey and France and all sorts of things. And then I've just got this big desk which I write at, which just always has piles of stuff, because when I'm in a project I just have research books and notes and weird inspirational quotes everywhere. And yeah, then I kind of tidy it all when I finish a draft and it looks nice again. But I'm 70,000 words into my current book, so it's at real peak creativity.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my new word for messy.
What are your favourite things in this room?
I've got these three bits of my feminist art on the wall that I bought with the advance that I got for the book, young adult books I'm kind of best known for, which are called the Spinster Club series, which the first of which is called Am I Normal Yet, that came out in 2015 now. But they're three books about three teenage girls who start a feminist campaign group at their college, and called the Spinster Club. And yeah, when I got the advance, I bought myself three prints from this wonderful artist in America, and to represent each book. And they're just like, again, like motivational things. So one says, her success is not your failure.
Yeah,
which I do feel as a female writer you have to remind yourself of a
Absolutely.
lot, even though I hate to admit that it is something I have to constantly check, because I do feel women always, maybe it's all writers, but I feel maybe sometimes it's a particular thing you can be like, oh, why has she got this and why has she got that, and I have to be like, no, her doing well does not mean I have failed. There is enough success around to go around for all of us. One is called Dare to Be Brave, which I need constant reminding in my writing, because I try to write very fearlessly, and that's why I think that you get like the most honesty from your work.
Yeah,
but you're always terrified, oh no, my mum's gonna read this, my friend's gonna read this, someone, like loads of people I'm never gonna meet are gonna read this, what are they gonna think of me? And you can get into that. And so yeah, Dare to Brave, and one is called Be Your Own Hero, and it's got like a little girl wearing a cape saying feminist hero.
Yeah.
So, that's something that I try to put in all my books. That's a sort of a theme of rescuing yourself. So they're my favourite bit of this room, I think.
They're lovely. I have to also say, you very modestly didn't mention that you've got loads of awards on your bookshelf. So
just be weird if those are my favourite things.
Yeah, it would be a strange note to start.
I'm just
on.
Scared that of breaking them. They're actually quite a stressful part of this room. They're all made of glass.
They look
and
very heavy.
I'm a hugely clumsy person, so I'm just like, if I make it through to the end of my life, that will be a miracle.
So do you do all of your writing here?
No, I get really lonely. I'm an extrovert author, which is quite rare, because I think lots of authors are quite happy to be by themselves. I go stir crazy. So I do try to get out and about a lot. So I meet lots of authors I know in the British Library, and I do a lot of writing there, which is great. And yeah, sometimes if I'm just stuck, I just go to a cafe and do that typical thing of finding a very corporate chain that don't mind you staying there for 3 hours even if you paid for one and latte and with free Wi-Fi, and try to just be around people, because otherwise I do go a bit mad. But when I'm on deadline, like I am at the moment, I do have to kind of become Gollum and sit in the cave and really get the words out and try and just go out in the evenings to get that social hit.
Yeah. So when you say you meet other authors at the British Library, you mean you actually have a sort of plan and you all sit together? I mean, a plan to meet up.
Yeah, we're like, do you want to have a writing day? And they have these reading rooms, which are incredible, like, because they're complete silence. And you get your own desk and like a really nice little green lamp.
Yeah.
And your own plug socket, and it's free Wi-Fi. And it's total silence. So it's quite intense. But the concentration in there is really contagious. So you find that you do get a lot done. You feel really guilty if you're just on Twitter when you're in that room, because you like look to the side of you and somebody's writing a thesis about 16th century literature and you're yeah. like, all right, I should get on with it. But it's nice to go there with someone, because after about an hour and a half, you're just like, I can't handle the science anymore. So then we kind of make a little hand signals to each other and go out and have a coffee
yeah.
and a chat. And then we go back in again. You kind of do three stints of that in a day. And it's really nice. I love it when I have days like
that. What's your sort of routine? What kind of time of day do you start writing?
I'm a real morning writer. If I haven't written anything by noon, it usually means it's going to be a bad day. I have a daily word count when I'm in a first draft mode, which is 2,000 words a day.
That's quite a lot, I think, for a day.
Yeah, I've been struggling to hit that recently. But then it's like when you're full time, like I am, you just feel guilty if you do anything less.
Right.
Because I'm like, well, what else am I doing? You know, I should really be more productive. People who are sat in their offices are having to just work even though they're not in the mood, you know, for 7 hours a day. So I should surely do that. And I break that up. I tend to do that in about three chunks of 25-minute bursts of writing. And I'm really unprecious about my first drafts.
Hang on a minute. So you do three chunks of 25 minutes and that's 2,000 words.
Mm.
That's incredibly fast, I think, considering that you're, you know, you're writing creatively. So you're coming up with the, you know, ideas as you go, I imagine.
Those words aren't good words. I mean, they exist, but they're terrible, and the order in which they're in is shamefully bad. My first drafts are awful. And that is just always how it's been. I just have to... Somebody once came up with a phrase, the trash draft. And I was yeah. like, oh, that is me. I have to just get it out there before I can start editing it. And I don't even let anybody, even my agent, read a book until I've gone through about four edits.
Right.
So 2,000 words a day sound impressive. But if you read those 2,000 words a day, you're like, how is this person an author for a living? She is a terrible writer.
I'm sure that's
this isn't even really English. So you can work quickly if you're writing utter cack, but hidden amongst that, there are sentences that with a bit of work will work and characters that are quite well realised. And so it's just kind of sanding down the block of stone over time so it gleams. But yeah, I'm not somebody who writes and rewrites a sentence until it's perfect and then moves on to the next sentence. I'm just like, get it out, get it done. It's a disaster, but it's a disaster that exists and therefore I can work with it once it's finished.
Yeah. So how long does it take you to complete that trash draft, if you will?
If I've not got anything else going on and I can just write, maybe 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Because I write now both teen fiction and adult fiction, juggling those two mean I don't always get such a nice run up to a draft as I would like, because you start writing, get into it for 2 weeks, you're really hitting word count and kind of got into the rhythm of the story, and then my children's publisher Osborne will be like, oh, we need your edits for this other book. And so you're like, oh, and so you have to kind of stop and get it out and reread the book and do that edit, which probably takes about 2-3 weeks, and then get it back, and then you have to get back into the book again, but then you might have to go on tour. So at the moment it's taking maybe 6 to 9 months because I'm kind of always batting tennis balls out of my court. But I used to be a news journalist, so I never think that I work hard. I think anyone who's worked in a newsroom will never think that they've worked hard after they leave a newsroom. So I'm quite used to being very productive and not thinking anything of it, just because that's how I was trained to write and work, to just be like, I'm exhausted and it's probably rubbish, but I have to get it out. So,
yeah.
It's lucky to have that training.
Yeah.
And it means you feel lazy always after you've left.
Yeah. I definitely want to talk about that. But first of all, I wanted to ask you what your first memories are of writing.
I actually had a slightly untraditional upbringing in that my mum was like the main breadwinner. I went out to work and my dad looked after us. And he was really a huge fan of stories and books, and we just read together all the time. But he was also very child-centered in getting us to tell our own stories. And so my earliest memory of writing is him sitting with an old typewriter, which he actually had to feed the paper in. I mean, I remember it was an electronic typewriter, which was really high-tech at the time. That's how old I am. And I would tell a story and he would type it up, and no matter how silly or ridiculous it was, he would type it like it was the best idea ever, which is really a lovely thing to have.
That's
a child
lovely.
To have, and I think that must have really sowed some seeds in your voice is worth something, even if it's coming out with gibberish nonsense about a squirrel that lives in heaven, which I think my first story was I remember it was about a squirrel called Bushy who was playing musical bumps in heaven and bumped too far down and fell through the clouds and ended up in Earth.
That's actually really good.
Thank you.
How old were you when you came up with that,
like,
do you think?
6, maybe.
Oh, that's so lovely.
So that's some of my earliest memories. And then just it being the only thing I was good at in school. If you looked at my results, like, it would be not very good for maths and not very good for science. Terrible for PE. And in English, I would always get A's. And they said that was nice. It was nice to have one thing to feel that you were good at, because the rest of school I found quite hard.
Yeah.
Still do. Whenever somebody talks to me about science or maths, I just feel like they could be talking in Japanese or something.
I was going to ask if you had a particular teacher or somebody who was influential in your development as a writer, but it sounds like maybe it was your dad.
It was my dad, but there was also two teachers who I'm still in touch with that were incredibly encouraging, and you never forget that. I just think teaching is such an amazing job, because you really, like, I can see how it changed my life just having teachers who believed in me, and you just never know what the impact that you're gonna have. But yeah, my GCSE English teacher, a man called Mr. Dundas, absolutely incredible, really, really supportive and believed in my work and helped me start a creative writing club, and again never made any of my stories feel that I was stupid. And then Jonathan Foster, my university lecturer at Sheffield. Slightly sterner way of encouraging me. Just very more like old-fashioned newsroom hack. Kind of like, I've taken 10 marks off your work because you put 2 exclamation marks in there. And if your writing was good enough, you wouldn't need those exclamation marks.
I mean, that was a great lesson for any writer. But,
I think he had a tally on his wall. And if you reached a certain threshold of using exclamation marks over the course of a year, he would like drop you down 10. Like, he was harsh. But he would just completely obliterate your work and then be like, but well done, very good, very good. That is actually quite good. And that meant so much. And we still email now and he's still super encouraging. So teachers, man, like,
oh gosh,
means
they're life-changing.
They really are.
So when did it become clear to you that writing was going to be your career?
I'm still not sure it has. I feel like anyone who is lucky enough to be creative for a living lives in that constant state of, how long am I going to get away with this? This is too wonderful. I'm too lucky. When's the luck going to
so
run
nice
out?
That you feel like that.
You never take it for granted. Like, stories don't exist unless people want to read them. I think J.K. Rowling said that. And so you're just kind of owe it to your readers and you hope that they still like your stories. But I'm trying to think the moment. It was making the leap from writing part-time, so I used to work full-time as a journalist, and would then use my annual leave to do edits and go on book tour, and was just exhausted for about 5 years. I look back on that time, I'm like, how did I cope? Be writing on the train into work, writing in my lunch break, editing on the way home, you know, writing over the weekends, using my annual leave to go to Manchester and do a public event only like 3 people turned up to. Oh. And, you know, just like those early years of trying to make it as an author, you're just like, is this ever going to happen? And you know, my agent was always like, it takes a while to build a brand and a readership, and you know, you might not even be into it about your 5th book. She was really good about setting my goals. But I remember that moment where the books are doing so well that I was really struggling to keep up my day job, and was starting to be like, is this now the time that I make that jump?
What was that like? Was that slightly terrifying, or did you feel pretty confident at that point?
Absolutely terrifying. I still remember that first day when I was, because I gave in my notice at my job where I was working as a journalist for a youth charity just before Christmas, and I had the Christmas break, and I was like, I'll go back on like January 3rd. I was like, that's when I'll start writing. And still remember that day, you know, the person I lived with at the time went off and went to their job, and I was like, great, this is it. And just me in my house writing and just going, oh Lord, I hope this is okay. I hope this is okay. But I think any self-employed person feels that way. But it was amazing. After a while, I kind of got the hang of it, and having a rhythm and setting myself things like a word count and trying to only work Monday to Friday, so still having weekends and evenings. And yeah, I now feel like an author. For ages, whenever anyone asked me what I was doing, like at the hairdresser or something, I'd be like, oh, I'm a journalist, or I work for a charity. Even when I didn't even work there anymore, I'd say it because I felt like such a fraud.
Yeah.
Saying the word author.
Yeah.
Also, people get really weird with you when you answer the question, what do you do for a living, author? Yeah, it's really...
Why? What do you mean?
It's just a job that instantly everybody has an opinion about and everyone has lots of misconceptions about. And to some degree, I guess, is quite an interesting answer to that question. And so it's really hard to answer that question without suddenly the conversation, A, being a bit weird, and B, then just being about you.
Right.
And you're like, I was just trying to answer a simple question, and now the conversation's been about me for 25 minutes, and that makes me feel really uncomfortable and rude, and like I feel like I'm really important. But I don't know how to answer that question because it is what I do for a living. But everyone's like, oh, wow, and have you been published and this and that? And they're so fascinated because I think storytelling is such a human thing, and everybody is a storyteller and everyone wants to have written a novel, and, you know, you're living somebody's dream come true a lot of the time. But yeah, so I still am trying to work out a way of answering that question, which doesn't make it weird.
Yeah.
It means that if we're already talking about something else, we can get back to it, because I'm not, you know, I don't like that feeling of being, oh, I'm an author and I'm so important. And I'm just like, no, it's what I do for a living and I love it, but I'm just as interested in what you're doing for a living. And
yeah,
let's move on now.
So when you went full time with the authoring, you were working on which number book were you on at that point?
So I went full time with my 6th okay. YA book, okay. which was called It Only Happens in the Movies.
Yeah.
And I did... wrote 2 more YA books before I wrote my first adult novel.
Okay. So going back to your first YA novel, which was Soulmates, how did that come about? And, you know, what did you want to achieve with that book? Because, I mean, at that point you had none of the experience that you now have. And that must have been quite a nerve-wracking time, I imagine, doing that first one and getting the publishing deal. Talk me through that.
It was such a weird part time in my life. And that book is so... I could never read that book back. I think I would just cringe so much.
Really?
I feel like it's like my first pancake.
Right.
You know, when you're just like, oh, I've never written a book before. Like, you know, when you happily poured a batter mix into the frying pan and you're doing everything, you know, like you're supposed to do, and this pancake turns out really badly. And then you're like, oh, oops. And then all the others turn out okay. I think lots of people feel that way about their debut novel, because you hopefully get better with time. I wrote it without any expectation. I was just working in a newsroom, was really stressed, quite unhappy because I hated news, because you're just dealing with everybody's worst days of their life every single day, and I'm quite an empathetic person, and so I just absorbed it more than I probably should in order to be a good news reporter. I guess I have the ability to, you know, just not care so much. Yeah. Whereas I was just like, ah. And I just had this idea for like this quite sci-fi book that I was hoping would kind of satirize some of the books that were doing really well in YA at the time. Like, it was when Twilight was really big, and this idea that you meet the love of your life when you're 16 years old, and yeah. You know, and it's the most incredible, powerful thing in the world. And I was a bit like,
yeah,
is that really what happens? Like, and so like wanted to write a book that kind of unpicked that. But yeah, I just wrote it around my deadlines, and it was my hobby. It was how I relaxed. It was what I thought about in my head when I wanted to not think about how stressed and tired and I was and how much I hated being a news journalist. And just so for 2 years, I just wrote it as a hobby. And it was only when I finally finished it and like right at the end, I was like, oh, I've written a whole novel. And then read it back and was like, it's not awful. Like, obviously it needs a lot of work, but, you know, actually this story is okay. And yeah. Then started thinking maybe I could try and publish it. And I miss that period in my life so much, in that writing without any expectation, with complete freedom, without worrying about the market, without thinking about readers or reviews or trying to make ends meet or whether or not it's commercially viable. Just, I love writing. I believe in the story. I'm going to do it when I'm in the mood, and it doesn't mean anything. Like, I feel very wistful about that, because you just never get that again. Even though I love what I do, I'm very lucky. Like, writing your first novel without expectation is a really wonderful thing on reflection.
How do you approach writing for that market? Obviously, I think your books are excellent because they're not patronising at all. But you are also obviously catering to a reader who's in that period of growth and flux, maybe, and learning. And I think your books feel very supportive to that reader. And I was also really interested, I've just been reading the places I've cried in public, and it's not, you know, it's obviously not pitched super young. There's swearing in it, there's, you know, sex, there's some quite heavy issues explored in it. So how do you negotiate all of that, and what's your, do you have a kind of reader in mind, who's your person, who you're writing for?
I think a reader in mind, when I write YA fiction, my reader is year nine. In my head, I think about year nine.
And that, how old is year nine? Is
that's
that
14, 15.
Yeah, it's such a tricky year, yeah, I think.
It's where puberty hits and everyone just goes completely berserk. And ask any teacher who worked in secondary school, and they're like, oh, year nine. It's just like, doesn't matter which year nine, every year, it's just the fact that they're year nine. It's just like, oh.
Yeah.
And that's also when the reading age drops off. So year seven and year eights read a lot for pleasure. And then you hit year nine and they just aren't interested in books anymore. So to me, that's like, ooh, how can you get them? Like, that's a real challenge to me. And that's when I think you need books the most, because you're so lost and everyone's combusting into puberty, yeah, and achieving different things at different times. And it's when exam stress hits and first loves hit. And if you're going to get a mental illness, you're probably most likely actually statistically to develop it around year nine. It's just so much going on. And I think books are such a safe place to be helped through that, and also just a way to escape that. Like, yeah, if you have a terrible day at school but you're reading a great book, you can just go home and de-stress. In terms of how to hit them, it's just trying to get yourself into the headspace of a teenager and remember what was and was what wasn't important, and trying to remove that adult filter that years of experience I've had since being year nine have got to be. So it's like, not being invited to that party is the worst thing in the world, or
yeah,
walking past your crush in the corridor, even if he doesn't know you exist, is the highlight of your Monday.
And absolutely. Just,
and not getting your period when everyone else in your class has, like, things that over time you're like, oh, why did I want this? This is terrible. It's trying to get back into that, but offering that adult perspective hidden in the book, that it is going to be okay and you should believe in yourself and standing up for what you believe in. I think adolescence is a really good time to start learning about what you're made of and what you're going to accept and what you're not going to accept.
Yeah, it's a crucial time, yeah.
So it's a tricky market to write for, but it's so rewarding if you get it right.
Yeah.
And if teenagers hit your work, but you're also having to think of gatekeepers, like librarians, are they going to let this book be in the library? Because yeah. they're like the gatekeepers. Are you going to get censored if you put the word fuck in it?
Yeah, how do you negotiate those sorts of questions?
I just always have to tell the truth, and teenagers swear.
Yeah.
And teenagers
have
sex. It's
not like they've never heard the word fuck before, yeah.
And teenagers self-harm, and teenagers do lots of things that make us feel hugely uncomfortable. But actually, when you're in year nine, it was your normal reality, and you didn't feel like it was uncomfortable, it was normal. And so it's fighting for that. Yeah. And I'm really lucky that my publisher let me go to quite dark places and tell the truth. But I think that's been my success has come from that allowance. And so I'm very lucky, because I think that some authors feel quite stifled writing in YA, and like they have to clean it up.
Yeah.
And then feel like the story isn't as authentic as they want it to be. Whereas Osborne have just been like, we trust you, go for it.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking as well that, I don't know, you can tell me whether this is true or not, but I feel like if you're writing for a YA audience, you probably have perhaps more feedback from readers than you would with an adult audience. Or do you find that you've gathered a bit of a community of young readers who are into your work?
They're lovely teenagers. Like, if they really like your work, they tell you it, and they just do incredible things. Like, they do fan art.
Yeah.
Like, they'll draw pictures of like your characters in a scene and send it to you on Instagram, and you're just crying in your room going, this is the most amazing thing. Or they'll be so inspired. Like, one of my happiest moments of my career is my Spinster Club series, which is about starting a feminist campaign group in school. Like, so many young people went off and started their own spinster clubs and started fem socks in school.
That's amazing.
And campaigned to be allowed to wear trousers. And like, so you just, as I said, if you can win over a teenager, it's just, I love teenagers. I think they're great. Whenever I go into schools to do talks, which I do a lot as part of my job, I just come out feeling wonderful because they're just so vibrant. And
yeah.
So it is nice. Writing adult fiction is wonderful and fulfilling in different ways. But adults don't tend to be as enthusiastic and as positive and just this kind of giddy way that only a teenage girl in year nine can be, which is just contagiously wonderful.
We learn to be more inhibited, I think, don't we? Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that I thought it was really interesting. You said you see yourself as a bit of an activist, and I wanted to talk about that. I know that you've recently become an ambassador for Women's Aid, and I think you're quite unusual as a writer in that your books, as you say, they're not issues books, but they do almost have a sort of subliminal teaching material feel to them, because you address repeatedly, mental health issues, healthy relationships, consent, feminism and women's rights. I mean, it's really laudable, actually, what you do through fiction. Is that a kind of conscious decision that you make?
Completely. As I said, I see my books as activism because I believe in the power of stories. And I really believe that everyone should fight for what they believe in. And part of that is looking at your strengths as a person and going, what is the best way that I can contribute to making the world a slightly better place than how I found it? And to me, I've kind of worked out storytelling seems to be the way that I'm able to connect with people, make them think, sometimes maybe get them to change their mind. You know, I worry sometimes that sometimes impacts my commercial viability because I think sometimes people do just want a happily ever after, or to not have a book that makes them feel quite uncomfortable because I'm really confronting something that they're like, oh no, I don't want to think about life that way. That means I've opened a box and I don't want that box opened, and I'm just like, I opened the box. But I can't write any other way. I do have an agenda, and I can't help but have an agenda, but it's an informed agenda and comes from research and also just my life experiences. Of I spent 5 years working for a charity that helps young people, and I can't unsee what I saw in those 5 years. And what I saw every single day was just this epidemic of violence against young women. Mm. Just waves of waves of waves. And it would just present in all sorts of different ways. And I just was like, I have to do something about this and use that to inform my storytelling.
Yeah.
And hopefully help people who are in a bad place read my book and feel better or informed or empowered to make a healthier step.
I think that's incredibly inspiring, and actually it's also something that I think you brought over into your first adult novel, How Do You Like Me Now, which you published in 2018 and became a Times bestseller, and certainly everyone I know loved it, and I loved it so much that I remember I went back to bed in the middle of the afternoon one weekend and just like basically cancelled all my other plans. I was like, I'm just going to go back to bed and finish this book, but I'll stop now because I know you don't like the compliments.
I'm squirming again. but thank you.
So at what point did you think about writing adult fiction? Was that something that was always part of the plan? Or
it never was. I just got led by the story. I had turned 30 myself and just the world went crazy. Just from being 29 and 11 months old to 30 and 1 month old, just suddenly I was getting asked questions. I felt this huge pressure. All my spare time was used going to hen do's and weddings and people pitching professional engagement shoots. It was just, I found it really odd, and some of it made me uncomfortable. And then I did just come across this idea of Tori, the character, did just sort of turn up in my mind, this sort of somebody who on the outside looks like they've totally nailed being in their 30s, but behind the scenes is actually a complete mess. Because I was seeing things like people like having conversations with somebody kind of going, oh my god, me and my boyfriend had the worst fight ever last night, we almost broke up, and I was crying and I was screaming at him, and like, I just actually don't think I can be in this relationship anymore. And then the picture of him would go up on that date of them going like, date night, hashtag, like, had such an, I'm really like, what's going on? Like, you're making everyone feel bad looking at that. And I know that that date, like, ended in you screaming at each other on the Thames. Like, why are we doing this to ourselves? Why are we doing it to each other? And then the story erupted and I couldn't not tell it. Tori was just in my head.
What to you is good writing?
I mean, it is really lovely what you said about when you're reading How Do You Like Me Now, you just cancelled everything and was just lost in the book. To me, that's what good writing is. You don't even notice that you're reading anymore. You've just completely transfigured yourself into the head of this person that doesn't exist, and you're in their head living their life. You can't wait to find out what happens to them, and you're just racing through the pages. And particularly in a world that's so currently full of distractions and podcasts and Netflix series and music to listen to and films to watch, and you know, to grab somebody's attention with that, with good old-fashioned book,
yeah,
to me is the ultimate win.
Do you know when you're doing that as a writer? You know, can you look at a chapter and tell that readers are going to have that reaction to it?
In the edits, I can kind of tell where I've over-egged something, or maybe a scene's gone on a bit too long. I might be overly critical towards the end of the editing process with Hodder, especially my adult books. I'm just like, I'm just going to take this out, it's boring. And they're like, no, it's not boring, it's just you've read this book 6 times. Right. And I'm like, well, it's boring now. And they're like, no, I promise you, on first read, that was a good chapter. I'm like, I'm still going to take it out. And they're like, no, I'm a ruthless. If I'm even slightly bored, I take it out. So I think that is just an instinct just from reading a lot and then writing a lot. You kind of get a vibe to it. I certainly notice it in other people's work when I'm like, it's when you put that book down, that's when you've lost.
Yeah.
So it's just constantly trying to not give them a reason to.
Yeah. And what is the experience of writing like for you emotionally?
I just turn into a horrible person.
That seems unlikely, but
I hate myself when I'm drafting, because I'm like in a draft now and I've just kind of having to like wear this coat of self-loathing, which I know I always have to wear when I'm in that process. And then in a moment I write the end, I can shrug it off. And because you're distracted, you're grumpy. You have to write all the time, and writing's really hard. It doesn't get easier. Like putting words on a page, when it's so much more fun to just like open your fridge and look in it. You know, do you ever do that? You're just like, I know everything that's in my fridge. Not even hungry. I'm just going to go downstairs and open it and stare into it and waste 5 minutes of my life, because that's so much better than writing. And then just because my first drafts, I think, are garbage, it's just like writing it going, this is terrible. And you know intellectually that you felt like this about all the other books at that stage, but now they're all polished, published things on your shelf that you're really proud of. And you're like, no, maybe this one is all rubbish. Maybe you kind of forget it. And you're just so scared that you're not going to ever hit the end, that you're getting lost no matter how much you plot it. Kind of like the inspiration. I'm just very grumpy, disorganized. My house falls apart. I smell. I just hate it. So even though I love my job, it's funny how much I hate my job.
Yeah.
That part of it.
Who do you show your work to first?
My parents.
Really?
Actually.
That's fascinating.
Yes. I think it's just back from those days where, you know, I used to tell my stories with my dad. They're the people I show first. And then my agent, who I trust implicitly. I just love her so much. She's the best human in the world. I owe her so much. So they're the people that I show first. In terms of any other friends or family, even my partner, I don't let them read it until they're at proof stage. Mm. Just because I'm so ashamed of how bad I am in the beginning. I don't want to like give them to be like, God, you're terrible at this. I kind of want to be like, it's in a good enough condition once it's at proof stage where I let other people read it. But then I'm freaking out.
So by my count, you've written 11 novels. Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, good. I thought my internet research might let me down on that one. That is incredible. If you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
33.
Okay, so wow. Do you ever struggle to write or find ideas?
I do all the time. Coming up with new ideas is always the thing that you worry about the most as a author. Like, am I gonna get a new idea? Especially now I've got to write YA fiction and adult fiction, so you're kind of creatively got two hobs on the go. I worry about that a lot. But luckily I haven't dried up yet. And I do think that is because I really believe that living makes you the best writer. And I try to just live as much as I write and learn. So I'm in training to be a counsellor at the moment. I'm doing evening classes and counselling training. Take me about 5 years to be a trained counsellor, but I just love it. I'm learning about humans and relationships and attachment theory. And, you know, it's fascinating. And that obviously informs my work. And I try to go to the theatre a lot. And living in London's great because you can get cheap tickets to everything. And go out and converse, and it is just by living that I think you kind of, it's usually when you're with friends and you start realizing you're having the same conversation with different people about something similar.
Yeah,
that's when I start going, oh, there's something in here. That's sort of the zeitgeist of the human experience at that moment in time. And so yeah, at the moment I'm doing okay, but I will always panic or stop.
Looking back over your writing career so far, can you identify, have there been sort of breakthrough moments where you've learnt something about writing that has made you a better writer?
There's actually two books that I've read that have totally changed my attitude towards writing. And whenever anyone asks me for writing advice, I now just point them towards those books. One is On Writing by Stephen King.
That's fantastic. Yes.
Yeah. He says it better than I ever could. So I'm just like, read that book. I think my favourite quote from that book is, the road to hell is paved with adverbs. So whenever I see any manuscript, like word in my manuscript that's got a ly on the end, like an ly word, I'm like, no, take it out. The road to hell is paved with adverbs. I love that. And then a book I read this year, which I'm just bleating on and on about because it's so good, is called The Science of Storytelling.
Okay.
But he uses psychology and the science of the brain to explain how to write good stories. So he comes at it from a totally different angle. So traditional writing advice, like a structure, like you need a call for action, you know, the quest, you know, Gandalf turns up and says to the Hobbit, you've got to do this with the ring, you know, this moment of change that happens in all the beginning of any novel. you know, from like people used to study from a structure point of view, comes at it from a psychology point of view. Why do humans notice change? What change do humans notice? What change is interesting to a human being? And how can you put that in your writing? It's absolutely fascinating.
That sounds fantastic.
Even in terms of like the science of sentences, he's a bit like, you should always write a sentence in the science of how you'd experience it as a human, which kind of explains active voice and passive voice. So right. It would be like, Jenny's dad received a kitten. That's not how you experience that in the human brain. Like, Jenny is giving the kitten. That's what you see. So that's the sentence that you should write.
Yeah.
And so if you just literally tweak all your sentences to the way that you would experience it as a human being, you're removing so many barriers.
You make it much more
between the reader and the writer. And then that's when you get that magic where you've transported them off into this land.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's amazing. He basically teaches you how to hack people's brains, which is what writing is.
Yeah.
But he uses it from a psychology point of view, like, how do you get in?
Yeah.
Such a good book.
And when you look back over your career as a writer so far, what are you proudest of?
I'm really proud of the legacy of the Spinster Club books, like those emails that I get from girls who have discovered feminism, started their own spinster clubs. Like, that is just exactly what I hoped those books would achieve. I could never have imagined it. Like, they've sold in so many different languages. There's spinster clubs in Finland, there's spinster clubs in Germany.
That's incredible.
It's just like, I was having this incredible conversation with this French person who was like, how'd you be a feminist in France when our whole language is gendered? Like, everything's a boy or a girl.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's just, oh, it's amazing. And my other most proud moment is the amount of messages I get from people who've read my adult debut, How Do You Like Me Now? And then left their relationship. Mm. I get those messages a lot. I've had somebody recently who called off their wedding after reading that book. And it's not because I'm happy, but people are breaking up. But I am happy if people are leaving a relationship, which is like Tom and Tori's relationship in that book, because it is an emotionally abusive relationship. And they're just like, oh, you know, you've just made me realize I have to get out. And or somebody like, I read it and now I'm so much happier. I left a year ago. And that is, I can't, that's what, again, I really hoped that book would do.
Yeah.
And was get people to leave. So those are my two proudest moments as a writer.
That book that Holly recommended at the end, The Science of Storytelling, is by Will Storr. So do check that out. Thank you so much to Holly, and her new grown-up novel, Pretending, is out in April. You could also do a lot worse than to buy one of her YA titles for the teenage girl in your life. We've got five more brilliant writers still to come in this series, from the very entertaining journalist and celebrity interviewer Andrew Billen to the humorist and screenwriter Charlie Brooker. Do subscribe so you don't miss them. See you next time.